Welcome back to another episode of The Macrumer Show. You know, I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, but we have a sister site, Touch Arcade, which is all about mobile gaming, games on the iPhone. You know, the name says it all. And these are the main guys. We got Jared and Eli, our coworkers, who I only see. Well, Eli, you used to be full-time Touch Arcade. You still do the podcast. They have their own podcast. And so this episode is all about Apple gaming. And so we figured, why not like reach into our own bag? We have an MCU universe, a Macrumers universe, where this is the crossover episode.
We don't charge an appearance
fee. This is the crossover episode that nobody asked for. But we're doing it.
Should we do some background on Touch Arcade in case people aren't aware of?
And honestly, you guys need to give that background because I see you guys once a year.
Dan doesn't know.
No, I don't. I see you guys once a year. But you're my favorite.
I text you every once in a while. Come on.
That's true. I mean, we talk, but. So anyways, we have Jared and Eli from the Touch Arcade. So go ahead.
Hi.
Take it away.
Thanks for having us, Dan. Touch Arcade. Oh, yeah, I guess it started way back in 2008, actually. Arn, the founder of Macrumers, started it along with Blake Patterson, who people might know as somebody in the retro computer, especially Apple world. And it started, I think, just kind of as a hobbyist blog. Interestingly enough, it started before the App Store was even around, and its first content was kind of covering the jailbreak and like homebrew scene of the original iPhone. And then obviously once the App Store did show up and had a bunch of games and stuff, there's a ton of stuff to talk about, and there wasn't really a dedicated website to that sort of stuff. So Touch Arcade started out pretty popular, but then it just grew exponentially over the next like several years. And then I think Eli came on in 2009 and I came on in 2010.
It fits.
And so, yeah, I've been there ever since. Eli left to go pursue other opportunities, 4 years ago now? Or
has
almost
it been
five,
that long?
I
have no concept of time anymore.
Barn kind of, he got so busy with Macrumers and stuff. And I think just kind of generally getting out of gaming in general, he's basically hands off with Touch Arcade anymore. And so it's me and a couple of our freelancers, really. We're a really small squad trying to kind of keep up with the constant avalanche of like mobile gaming news stuff. So,
and Eli, you still do the podcast.
I just
leaving.
Linger around. I'm like the guy that hangs out at GameStop that they just like can't get rid of.
Basically.
So what about, you left like Jared alluded to, and you did some pretty big things. So why don't you go ahead and talk about
that? Guess a little bit of my backstory since I left Touch Arcade was I eventually joined a startup called Game Club. We're doing a kind of cross-platform, cross-game subscription service that eventually launched on both iOS, Android, kind of competing with Apple Arcade. We eventually, had an exit of that company, got acquired by a larger company, and now I lead kind of the mobile business unit at a publisher called Game Mill out of Minneapolis. People might know them as the publisher behind Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl 2, which came out yesterday, and it's getting reviewed really well, so we're very happy about that.
Do you want to talk about that game a little more?
I mean, it's...
plug it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you really love Super Smash Brothers and you want a kind of love letter to the genre that includes a ton of Nickelodeon characters and a bunch of quality of life improvements that the larger sort of Smash community have been asking for over the years, like this is the game for you. Got a 9 out of 10 on IGN, so real.
What type of characters?
You get a bonus
like,
for that plug, right?
Can I be a SpongeBob? Like, yeah. Like beating up like the Rugrats or something.
Basically, yeah. I mean, it's yeah. It's a wide
that's awesome.
A wide variety of Nickelodeon characters. So
now, Hartley, what is your level of gaming?
Well, I'm sort of from that time of people now long gone, which was people that tried to desperately game on Macs when they basically couldn't with boot camp.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. I was one of those ones, and right. I did my best to make it work, and it to a large extent did, but I think If you're used to slightly more rich gaming experiences, maybe not so much.
Well, that's a great segue, because a lot of our topic is like Apple has been emphasizing gaming quite a bit. Now, I know you guys are, you know, focused on mobile gaming with Touch Arcade, but I'm sure you can still give plenty of...
I've been attempting to game thoughts on Apple platforms since the Apple II, so...
There you go. Yeah. So, playing Oregon Trail.
Then I had a Performa 550 CD, I think was the model, which was just barely able to run games like Myst and Seventh Guest and stuff like that, which, you know.
So how do you feel about Apple diving into, like, now, you know, we just had the new MacBook Pros come out with hardware accelerated ray tracing. They're pumping out or trying to get out some good, you know, AAA titles. I was just at a little get together where we got to speak with some developers for a lot of, you know, Apple put on like a little showcase of these games. And so I got to check out Resident Evil 4. Running on a MacBook, it was, you know, flawless, perfect. Just felt like I was playing on a console, just console level gaming like they promised. We tried the Division Resurgence on your iPhone, which I'm not a big fan of playing games like that, like with controls on screen. I don't know, maybe you guys can touch on all that, but what are your thoughts?
You and a lot of other people.
We'll start with Jared. We'll start with Jared, and then we'll just kind of go in this little square that we got going on here.
Okay. Well, first of all, yeah, with the Mac, the hardware stuff is totally impressive. And I think that's been true since the M1 came out. And I kind of hang around some of the PC gaming circles, which are notoriously very anti-Apple, anti-Mac for, a lot of good reasons, really. It's the type of people that want to, like, tweak their own computers, change components out when needed and stuff like that. All the stuff that Apple's never really been good at letting you do. And so... it's kind of like funny. There's like, you know, a lot of Apple hate in those communities. And so when the M1s came out, I was really surprised that there was a handful of people who went and picked them up just for like curiosity and testing purposes that were running games through Apple's like Rosetta, like translation layer, and then like benchmarking everything and being just blown away by the ability of it and how well it all worked and how seamless and easy it was. And so it was like kind of funny to see a lot of these sort of notorious like Apple haters be like, wow, I'm actually really impressed with what this is able to do. So I don't think it's like a hardware performance issue. I think Apple's doing a lot of great things there, but I think it's a broader problem with like ecosystem, because there's no real drive for me to want to rebuy a game on Mac so I can play it on my laptop, right? Like most PC gamers have most of their game library through Steam. And that library lives with you from, you know, place to place. And if you are asking somebody to have to go out and buy like yet another version of a game they might already own just so they can play it on a Mac, that's kind of a hard sell, I think. And so up until this point, I've always kind of looked at Mac gaming as just like a nice bonus, and it's there for like occasional things. But I don't see Apple ever really being like selling computers that people will buy specifically for gaming. It's more of just like, hey, I already have an Apple laptop. I already like Apple laptops. And when I'm traveling now, there's like a better selection of games if I'm bored in a hotel room or something like that. But like dedicated gaming machines, I don't see Apple ever really kind of breaking ground there.
Yeah. Eli? So I guess like, what do you think for me, you know, again, I've been playing games on Apple computers basically my whole life, you know, and it's, it kind of, to me, the state of Mac gaming and, you know, I guess like Apple gaming in general still feels like they're responding a little bit to the, I guess like accidental success of gaming on the App Store, right? Like, cause when you looked at, you know, kind of the genesis of all of this, I guess it, you know, like remember Steve Jobs was adamant of like, hey, if you want to do extra stuff on this phone, like use a Safari web app kind of thing. Right. And, that I think the App Store kind of came about as sort of an answer to, you know, the early days of Obsidian and all those other things, right? And it just, I think it took them by surprise by how well it's done. And it seems like, and, you know, I mean, God, I've read articles of people speculating that Apple is the number one game company in the world right now based on revenue just from the App Store, you know?
Yeah.
But it still sort of feels like, in a way, that they're still kind of trying to figure out what to do with all that. I mean, I don't mean to discount like the effort that Apple has made over the years. I mean, obviously, like, Apple Arcade's incredible. You know, some of these new games on the Mac, like particularly on the newer models, I mean, it feels like magic how well they're running on Apple Silicon and stuff. But I just, yeah, like, I don't know. I just kind of wish that they would go just like one step further, because like, I feel like if Apple kind of went just a couple steps further, they would, this gaming stuff would stop feeling like kind of sort of like an interesting hobby for them and a side note, and like something that is like truly transformative in the game space. You know, it's like they have the money to do it too. So,
And are you talking like if they did something like a dedicated gaming console,
not even,
or like an Apple TV,
I guess just
hybrid,
just more with like
something,
the software that they're pushing? You know, it's like, so like for me, like the Resident Evil Village stuff, mm-hmm, that, you know, we've been talking about on the TetraK podcast about, you know, how it just sort of feels magic that these Resident Evil games are running on your phone, right? I mean, like, if you would have gone back to the early, mm-hmm, days of iOS devices and even suggested that you would have parity with game consoles inside of, I don't know, a decade or less or something like that, like people would just laugh you out of the room, mm-hmm, right? And instead it's like, dude, I'm playing, yeah, a game on this that like I arguably looks better maybe than my Xbox or PlayStation or whatever. But I just wish that they would lean into that in with game releases that would actually like get people's attention as like, oh, I gotta get a Mac to play this game because it's an exclusive or, mm-hmm, or whatever else. Because, you know, an older Resident Evil game, it just sort of isn't that exciting compared to like what I guess they just like don't have like a system seller.
You mean you're not excited by Resident Evil 4, which came out when I was like 14?
Yeah, I mean, like that's the thing.
Well, to be fair, it's the remake.
I mean,
it's been remade like 40 times.
I mean, don't get me wrong, both these games, Resident Evil 4 and Village, are outstanding titles, but it's just like
amazing. Yeah.
You know, it's sort of the same problem that I feel like VR has in a way, in that it's like, what is the title either in VR or on the Mac App Store or whatever, where you're like, you know what? No, I need to get a Mac because they've got X, Y, and Z. Like VR is sort of in the same spot.
We'll touch on VR later because that's all going towards that. And it was pretty clear. But Hartley, what about you? What are your thoughts on some of these new titles that have come out and the way it's being supported on the Mac? Is it something that like you just kind of agree with Eli and Jared, where it's like, not going to be taken seriously still, but a nice to have? Or do you think it's the opposite?
Well, I agree. I think that we're still at an early stage, but something has changed at Apple in the way that they are presenting this. Gaming has been a focus at the last two events, and I feel like they've been talking about it increasingly before that, and now it feels like they are going for it a little bit more in terms of rethinking the Mac in particular as a gaming device, and rethinking the iPhone and the iPad as able to play console level games. So it's sort of a reevaluation of these platforms as a whole. But I completely agree with Eli that they kind of need to go a bit further. And I wonder if the way to do this in the long term, because I don't see it happening next year, if they just secure you know, another couple of maybe slightly older console titles, would be to invest in original content. And that is not something Apple would have done 10 years ago, but they're now spending over $1 billion a year on movies. So if they were to invest in just a couple of AAA Mac exclusives, or at least exclusives to the Apple ecosystem, that would be something really interesting and would really kind of draw a line in the sand in terms of Apple's commitment to gaming. But I don't know whether that's very likely. I don't know whether that's even possible.
I'm 100% with you there, because I feel like Jared and I have talked to death about this either, you know, in Discord or whatever else, where it's like, it's very cool that these games exist, but like, you know, if you could choose a way to play Resident Evil Village, it's like the iPhone is probably the least ideal way to play it, right? And like the Mac is better, I guess, because, you know, it's more of a sit-down experience. I don't know.
What about if you were to use like those backbone controllers where you connect it to the, you know, to like the sides of the phone? Or
I'm
if
a
you
big backbone fan.
Yeah, or if you like brought your own PS5 controller or Xbox controller to the iPad Pro. Like, so part of that showcase that was really like cool for me was, I'm like you, I don't, you know, I talked about earlier, I don't want to play games like that. I don't want to press, you know, that's not the type of game that I want to use my phone for, unless I had a Backbone controller or something else. And probably same with the iPad Pro, but like the fact that I could do that and that they all sync throughout the, like, I can buy one game, I can start Resident Evil, I could play it on my Mac, I could be on this, you know, subway or wherever I'm at, on the plane, mm-hmm. playing on my phone, and then pick up later mm-hmm. back on the Mac, or when I get home on your Apple TV. Like, that's cool, because it's the ecosystem that is what makes Apple appealing to most people. And if we can get games like that, you know, I think that's an interesting concept.
Is that true of my other question? Resident Evil games, though? I think you can only do that with one of them, right, Jared?
No. Village is already on the Mac App Store.
Right.
And that version is not going to be universal with the one that just came out on iPhone.
Right.
But Resident Evil 4, which has not launched yet, will be universal across all Apple platforms. So I agree with you that that's kind of a cool, like, bonus. Like, if you bought, like, it's more of an incentive to buy, like, I don't want to spend the money on Resident Evil 4 on just the Mac because I don't know how much I'm going to use it. But if you are like, oh, I can play it on my phone, my iPad, or the Mac, or whatever, that's kind of more incentive to spend the money for that particular version, to have it with you on the go when you want.
Yeah, because I think that...
And then not to mention Apple Arcade Library. Yeah. You know, there's some good games on there, too, that, like, you know, that's just how it works. And then, real quick for you guys, I'm an idiot when it comes to this, like, PC gaming. I have no idea, man. So, like, with Steam, mm-hmm. what is to stop Apple from, like, you can do Steam on your Mac, mm-hmm. right? Is it just certain things mm-hmm. don't work, though?
Like, a lot of things don't work.
Can you? Yeah. So what's
it's really
the fix
up
there?
It's really up to the developers of the games themselves to add Mac support. And a lot of them do. And a lot of things launch even like day and date as a Windows and a Apple version on Steam. So, like, if you own a Mac, you can go download the Mac version of the Steam app, and it will go through the library of games you already own on Steam and tell you these are the ones that work on Mac, and you can download them and play them on your Mac. And it's not bad. Like, there's a decent selection, but I would say, like, the biggest stuff usually launches as Windows first, and then it'll maybe come out down the line, they'll add support for Mac. But it's always the problem's always been that the audience isn't there to put in the work to make a Mac version, really. So it's like, okay, like, we can put a Mac version in there, but who's really gonna buy it? Who's gonna make it worth our while to even add this?
So wasn't there something that Apple introduced, Hartley, about, like, making games a lot easier, like, for developers to be able to just kind of make that happen without
a ton of... The game porting toolkit, which was introduced at WWDC, and Apple is definitely investing in terms of the software with those sorts of tools, and they are investing obviously in the hardware with Apple Silicon. But this, for me, is the missing piece, and this kind of goes back to what Jared was saying previously, which is that there is this sort of missing piece in the ecosystem, which is something that works a little bit like Steam. And I think that we need, almost in the same way that you have, like, Apple Music Classical separate from the Apple Music app, and yet it doesn't have any content that isn't available in the Apple Music app. I think that's what needs to happen with the App Store and games. Games need to have their own center. I mean, literally, Apple used to have tout Game Center way more. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see an actual Game Center app where I can use it as a launcher. And then you can tie that into iMessage, you can tie that into a bunch of other features and actually make that available cross-platform. And it would feel more like a cohesive experience, because that's actually weirdly the thing that holds me back, is I don't want to see gaming apps alongside my productivity apps on my Mac. It just, it feels wrong and weird and kind of disconnected in a way that when you pick up a console or you pick up, when you open Steam, it's just a completely different experience. And I think they need location.
We've talked about that too before, where it's like, love gaming on an iPhone, but when you get something like a Resident Evil Village that just came out, which is so impressive and cool that you can play something like that on something as small as an iPhone. Also, like, you're getting dinged with notifications that are distracting you or whatever. Like, is it the best way to experience that game, as opposed to, like, dedicated gaming hardware? And I feel like when the iPhone first came out and gaming started to really kind of take off, I was always like, oh man, I can't wait to have this be my everything device, and all my gaming is done on here, and it just does everything. And like slowly I've kind of come back around to being like, man, I really appreciate my Steam Deck or whatever, because I can ignore my phone. I could ignore the stuff that's happening on it and just focus on gaming. And I think that's a better experience for a lot of people than having, I don't know, trying to have your phone also be like your dedicated gaming device. There's a lot of stuff that can kind of get in the way of that. But something that Hartley just said that I agree with is there's like a missing layer there. And that game compatibility toolkit, I don't know much about, but I will say that something that really helped the Steam Deck take off and become a really popular device was it's a Linux device, and Valve created like a compatibility layer that translated Windows games to run on Linux very easily and very well. And so for most people that bought a Steam Deck, like, you know, there's dedicated Linux versions of a handful of games, but it's kind of in the similar boat as like Mac stuff. Like sometimes there's Mac support, sometimes there's Linux support, but like Windows is like the default. And so people that bought a Steam Deck, you just load up your Steam profile and it will, even if there's not a Linux version of the game, it's going to run through this compatibility layer and work really well and allow you to play all the games you already own on Steam. And so I could see something like that, like rather than maybe Apple even having their own game hub or whatever, Apple just kind of embracing Steam and being like, okay, you can use our compatibility toolkit to make games that will run well on the Mac, even if it's like a Windows version. Because I know that if a lot of people that own hundreds of games on Steam already were able to just load up Steam and know that they could install most of those on their Mac, mm-hmm. I feel like Mac laptops in particular would have a good chance of catching on with gamers, because one of the big problems with Mac, with gaming laptops, PCs, is that their battery life is terrible. And so you're bringing this laptop along on your road trip because you want a game, but you're getting like an hour of time to run like these big AAA games or whatever. That's somewhere where Apple really excels well with their laptops. And so I could actually see like a PC gamer person that has a Windows PC at home to a desktop to game on, having a Mac laptop as their like road gaming device and also their normal laptop, if all their Steam games would also work on it, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I feel like that compatibility layer, giving support to all those games you already own, is one of the key things.
I'm totally with Jared on this. And the way that Valve works is so mysterious, where they'll just like release something on a random Wednesday and email six people in the games press and it's just out. Like that's basically how Counter-Strike 2 launched, right? So it's not outside of the realm of possibility that some random Thursday you guys just get an email from Valve that's like, hey, guess what? We added the Vulkan emulation layer in macOS Steam. Every single Steam game just works on Mac now. And at which point it's like, game over for the Mac App Store on gaming, because like, why in the world would you mess around with the Mac App Store when it's like you can, the Steam ecosystem is so mature and so great as far as like all the cloud save stuff, your game's working everywhere. And everything else. Like if I were Apple, like that's what I would be extremely worried about.
So with Steam being so prominent in this space, like is it too much for Apple to just like, why haven't they just like, if they really want to take it seriously, couldn't they just gone out and bought them? If they really could just make something so that they could port over all of their games, or is it too late?
Steam is a privately owned company owned by Gabe Newell, right? And as a result, like all the Steam financials are private. You know, like you don't know what a non-publicly traded company is making, right? So like, it is possible that Steam is worth just a truly unfathomable amount of money, like potentially even too expensive for Apple to buy at this point. I mean, like, they dominate. Like Steam is PC gaming, right? So how do you input a price tag on that? Like I don't know. It's going to be really interesting, you know, God forbid when Gabe Newell finally dies and like whatever happens with Steam and his estate and everything else, as that inevitably gets revealed, and people will just be amazed by how much it's worth, I bet.
No, I was going to say that I think really the solution is either that Apple pairs up with another company to provide that compatibility, like with Valve, and just kind of admits defeat in that way and just says, a little bit like they do with some of their accessories, that another company does this really well and Apple is not interested in the space. And I don't think that's too likely. I think it's more likely that they try and do their own version of Steam effectively that is unique to the Apple ecosystem. But that's probably years out. So I wonder what the next kind of, I don't know, maybe 5 years look like. Are we doing just every Apple keynote, get more games shown off, and we can go wow at the hardware and the ability it plays. But that's not going to be so impressive in a couple of years' time.
The problem is, like, Apple really need to get into the cycle of having these new games, like, day and date on the Mac App Store or App Store or whatever else. Because, like, you know, when I see a new game coming out, it's not really even a question of whether or not it's going to be on Steam on its release date. It's like, of course it's going to be on Steam, right? As opposed to the Mac App Store, it's like, oh, maybe this game will be the tech demo that they show for the next round of Apple laptops or iPhone or something like that. And maybe it'll come out eventually. But it's not like, you know, it's not like there's any guarantee that that game will ever be on Mac, really. I mean, much less, you know, with a small delay or whatever.
What about, like, that's getting a major title that they can go out and kind of throw some money at them to say, hey, you release with us for the first 3 months or something.
I mean, it's sort of what they've done with Apple Arcade.
Would that be enough?
You know, a lot of early exclusives and things like that with games that eventually come out later. And I think it's had an impact, but the hardcore gamer crowd is still so fickle when it comes to that kind of stuff that I think it would take more, much more to really get on everyone's radar as, like, oh, okay, yeah, Apple is a major player in, you know, quote unquote, like, the real game space, which is, you know, always such a nebulous thing of what that even means. But,
well, I also don't know what title you could do that with. Like, the newest Call of Duty comes out and is Mac exclusive for 6 months. Like, the gaming world would go ballistic over that, and it wouldn't, I don't think people would be like, well, fine, I'll buy a Mac to play this, you know what I mean? They would just be pissed off for 6 months until it came out on their PC or their console, you know what I mean? I don't know whether there's a title that exists that could be, like, so desirable that it would cause somebody to want to buy a Mac for gaming. But even if there was, like, where do you go from there? Because you still need to have the whole ecosystem behind it to support long term, because once you beat that cool game, then what do? You know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't know. It's like such a, they really need to start kind of, like, ground up to try and get their, you know, foot into the gaming world, because I lost count of how many times over the years we've been like, Apple will show interest in gaming in a serious way, and we'll tell each other, like, oh, this is the time. Finally, they're taking gaming seriously, and they might come out with some new initiative or something. But then, you know, a year later, it's like a long gone type thing, and the gaming thing never took off. So I do feel like they are taking it more seriously now, but then I just wonder, like, okay, once these big titles that they've announced have launched and stuff, like, when are they going to get bored? Or when is the team that's really pushing for that going to, like, go do something else? And then, because you saw that happen a lot with Apple Arcade. Apple Arcade launched with a lot of buzz and a lot of weight behind Apple pushing it. And then, like, a year later, like, I think everyone that was part of that team, like, wasn't with the company or was working on different things. It sort of got stuck into, like, this sort of cycle of, like, okay, some new games are coming out, but there was no big, like, parade for it, I guess. Which I feel like they really didn't capitalize on how much buzz and goodwill they had.
Yeah, Jared, I mean, launched. Like, particularly as we, you know, used to go to GDC every year, I mean, like, it was not abnormal at all to run into people that were, like, ex-Apple Games people that, you know, like, listen to our podcast or Red Touch Arcade or whatever, who are just like, dude, I agree with everything that you are saying, and you have no idea how hard we fought to try to do these things internally, but it just ultimately didn't go anywhere for reasons, you know, X, Y, and Z. Yeah. And, you know, it's just kind of a bummer. I mean, so like, the thing is, like, nothing that we're saying here, I promise, is anything that people in Apple haven't already argued about, you know, like, that's the crazy thing. They just, like, don't win those arguments.
For sure. You know? There's people that want gaming to be a thing in Apple. Yeah. Within Apple.
So what do you feel really needs to change with Apple Arcade? If they didn't take advantage of that momentum that I agree they had when they started, but it does feel like the platform's kind of, it's kind of that thing that, for a lot of people at least, you get with Apple One and you maybe play one game on it, but it's not at the forefront of your mind. It's not a must-have service in the way that even other things like Apple TV Plus now, with the recent price increases, it is becoming more of an essential, and Apple's definitely becoming more confident with it. But it doesn't feel like the confidence is there with Apple Arcade. So what needs to change with that?
Well, I think the lead up to launching Apple Arcade, Apple spent a lot of money on it and probably made a lot of big expectations out of it. that I think some were met and some probably weren't. But I think after the fact, you know, if they're just kind of like, you know, backing up dump trucks of money to developers to make these exclusive Apple Arcade games in the lead up to launch so they could have this big flashy launch, then you're kind of left going like, well, where'd that money go? What is it getting us? It would be a lot easier to tell if they shared subscriber numbers or like, you know, player numbers with Apple Arcade, which they don't. But I think it's reasonably successful now, and I think it's kind of just on autopilot. And every few months or so, they come out with like a big announcement of a couple like really big releases that'll make news. And I feel like the months in between are kind of just like the autopilot stuff, where it's like re-releases of games that were already on the App Store or whatever, or just kind of like very mild exclusive stuff that doesn't really make any waves. But then, like, for instance, their last week, they had a big announcement of what's coming for, they announced through November and December of all the new games coming. And one of them is an exclusive Sonic the Hedgehog 3D game that's like, got a really great art style and stuff like that. And like the buzz on the internet was like, oh my God, this looks like the Sonic game we've all been asking for years and years and years. And now it's exclusive to this stupid Apple Arcade thing. And a bunch of people like mad about that or whatever. And that's a situation where I'm pretty certain Apple's names is in the credits and they help finance and produce that game, which means it's very unlikely it's going to come to other platforms. And so if you're like a huge Sonic the Hedgehog fan, you know, like this is going to be like the only place you can get that game. And if it comes out and it's super well received and people are like, this is awesome, I don't know if that's like a needle mover for people to like want to subscribe to Apple Arcade just for that.
Not to make it worse for those people, but I did get to play that game a couple days ago and it was really, really good. Like it felt like,
yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be good.
It felt like old school Sonic, like I was playing on my Sega Genesis back in the day. And just, yeah, it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. So
the problem, though, is that like what makes comparing Apple Arcade to Apple TV Plus a little difficult, and we definitely learned this at Game Club, is that like people's tastes in games are often extremely specific. Whereas like, you know, you'll watch a TV show or a movie about pretty much anything, you know, like people are fans of like action movies, right? Which means like, I don't know, like anything with explosions, right? It's enormously vast, right? Whereas like in the gaming space,
Michael Bay had made a career just because of the explosions.
I mean, but in the gaming space, you know, it is not abnormal to run into people who are like, oh, I only play turn-based strategy games, you know? So like it's very tricky to build a content library around that, because like, if you made a subscription service that was nothing but turn-based strategy games, you're alienating, I don't know, 98% of the other people. And it's just real tricky. So like, I think like that's sort of something that Apple seems like they're still sort of going through with Apple Arcade, is like trying to figure out like, who is this really for? And making it for everyone creates sort of like a weird vibe, whereby making it for everyone, it's kind of not for anyone in a weird way. Like it's kind of weird to articulate a point like that, but it's just like, again, you know, people just have very specific tastes that it's hard to fulfill with a game subscription unless you just have a unbelievable amount of content.
Well, I know there's a lot of people that I hear from that love Apple Arcade because they have kids, and they're like, it's so awesome to be like, download whatever games you want, I don't have to worry about it. Like I used to have to worry when they would download a free game and then all of a sudden they're watching weird ads or maybe accidentally buying Smurf berries or whatever. So Apple Arcade from that sense is, it's very nice to have something that you don't have to worry about that stuff. Yeah. And the like breadth and selection of game types, I think is a good thing. There's a lot of really, 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 really good games on the service. And for years, ever since it came out, I was just like, this is an astounding value for $5 a month. And recently the price that just went up, and we talked about it on our podcast where we were like, well now, you know, a lot of people seemed mad about that, but I was like, even at whatever it is now, $7, I think, or something, even at like $7 a month, it's pretty darn good to have that many games that you don't have to worry about any in-app purchase stuff or ads. And there's a lot of really good games. Like it's still an incredible value. I think Apple themselves kind of devalued how good it is by pricing it so low in the first place, you know what I mean? But the other key thing I think is having to be part of Apple One, because so many people, I mean, if you're going to pay, I was in the same boat where I was like, if I'm going to pay $15 for family Apple Music, I'm going to pay an extra $5 to get all this other stuff too. It's kind of a no-brainer situation.
Right. Yeah, I would.
Yeah, so like I think a lot of people did get Apple Arcade through that and then have discovered, oh, this is awesome. Like, I can actually download these games and there's a lot of good stuff here. It's I think, a really good value for money. But I think the biggest problem with them is that, you know, they go really hot on cold on pushing it, I think, or making an effort to put like really cool exclusives that are making people take notice. It kind of just, to me, like I've said this already, but it feels like it's been on autopilot for at least the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'd echo Jared's sentiments on the incredible value of this stuff. I mean, like all these subscription game services, you know, whether you're talking Apple Arcade or Game Pass on Xbox or whatever else. I mean, it is seriously just unfathomable. Like, imagine describing to yourself when you were like a kid that had like the NES with one game, that in the future you're like, oh yeah, your parents will pay a few bucks a month and you'll just be able to play whatever.
Yeah.
Full games, no messing around. Like, it's just like, truly just unbelievable.
I used to buy the buyer's like game guides when I was a kid of games that I like couldn't afford, but like I could get the book, but I couldn't, like my parents weren't going to buy me the game. So I'm like, well, this is my best. The next best thing is I'm just going to read this and then be an expert at a game that I don't have, which is.
Yeah. Boring. I mean, and that to me, like, you know, having sort of the full scope of what that time period was like criticizing these subscription services just kind of seems a little weird. Cause it's like, dude, these things are so good compared to what you used to have. That like nitpicking random details is just like, what are you doing? You know, like, but I would be very, very, very curious to know, to see some kind of pie chart of Apple One subscribers, of what percentage of people engage with each part of Apple One, whether that's, you know, watching a single show or doing a single workout or playing a single game or whatever else. Cause it wouldn't surprise me if people didn't engage with a lot of it, cause it's sort of the default thing that you sign up for with your iPhone, you know?
Yeah, another thing with Apple Arcade that I think I don't personally use, so it's not on my radar all the time, but I hear a lot of people praise it, is that you can play a lot of those games on Apple TV too. And so they'll be like, oh, cool, like we can play on the living room TV, and they're all very family-friendly type games that I can play with my kids or whatever, and they're stuff that we already have anyway. And so if you didn't have a dedicated like game console, or especially if you have like younger kids that maybe aren't ready for that type of thing, this is like an awesome way to play games on the family TV altogether that you already like own already. So that's kind of like a huge selling point too, to somebody to want to subscribe to it. But I don't see like Apple talk about this sort of thing all that often. I feel like if you marketed it that way more, because I would be curious, like what Eli just said, how many people have Apple One and have Apple Arcade and even know about it? Like my wife does. Like I had to explicitly tell her, hey, you're on my family plan. We have this Apple thing. I had to tell her about Apple Music, that she can go on that and do whatever she wants. And then I was like, and then you have this arcade thing, touch this tab in the App Store, download any of these games when you're with our kids and they're driving you nuts, like download any of these games on here. They're basically free and you can play them. And it was sort of like, oh wow, I had no idea. She was like, you know, downloading like the free with ads games to, you know, keep the kids occupied or whatever. And I was like, you don't need to do that anymore. So I kind of miss Apple pushing some of these aspects of what's so great about
it. I kind of wonder if at the same time, like it seems like Apple has been put into somewhat of an impossible position on this, right? Because like Apple Arcade kind of seems like the solution to all those stories that you used to read a few years ago where it was like, oh my God, my kid loaded up this game and now I've got $5,000 worth of charges on my credit card or whatever else, right? Like Apple solves that problem. Sure. But at the same time, like Apple makes infinite amount of money from those types of games existing on the App Store, right? So it's like they're in this truly impossible position where it's like they can't really advertise like Apple Arcade is like, hey man, don't you hate those scammy free-to-play games? Well, check out Apple Arcade, because it's like those free-to-play games are the bread and butter of the App Store, right? I mean, like Candy Crush and all these other games, like that's not only are they genuinely good, but they also just like print money. So I don't know. I to be a fly on the wall of the Apple marketing as they're having these discussions would just be, because you know that they just end with like, I guess we'll just do nothing, because you know, like.
Well, it's funny because they definitely point out in the various Apple events and stuff like that, when they're talking about Apple Arcade, they make a point to say no ads and no in-app purchases. You know what I mean? So like they know that that's a thing that people want to see. or value to having games that don't have that stuff. But yeah, like you said, it's kind of hard to be like, isn't Candy Crush so gross with all of its fake coin packs and stuff? You know, like they can't say stuff like that because then they're hurting their own, you know, revenue line.
I wanna go back real quick, and Hartley, I wanna get your thoughts too. What about, you said, Jared, you don't play any games on the Apple TV. Have any of you guys done that? Because I just did it for the first time at that showcase, and it was like, why don't I do this more? Like you said, like, why don't I go, hey,
oh, totally,
to my kids, like, yeah, you got your Switch, and he wants a new game every week because he beats these so fast. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm not buying $60 worth of games like every week. We can't do that. Mm-hmm. But like, I can just be like, here, go wild. And we have an Apple TV in the living, in like the loft area. Like, just here's a controller, do what you want to do, and like, have fun. So Hartley, have you ever like experimented with that? And if not, like, what are your thoughts? Are you looking into doing that, or?
I have. I've tried it, but it's not something that particularly appeals to me. And I kind of, I wonder if this is, in as much as it's something that is a really appealing feature, say, to families or to sort of casual users, I do wonder where Apple Arcade goes in terms of console level games. Because that feels like the sort of inevitable conclusion, unless this just stays to mobile games and Apple Arcade sort of defines itself as something a little bit separate to these console level games. Because I can't see Apple saying, well, you can play Resident Evil on Apple Arcade, but you can only play it on certain devices. And suddenly then Apple Arcade is becoming something a little bit different. So what happens with that? And that is a big question. And again, that's why I think Eli's completely right that they look at these sorts of issues and they don't have the answer for it right now.
Because anything they do hurts one side of the business, right? So it's just like, I don't know. I guess the move is to make no move, you know? Like,
well, with Apple Arcade, is there any thoughts of that becoming something that goes over to Android? Like, one of the questions we have here is like, is Apple still the king of mobile games? Like, what's the other side look like? You know, I test Android phones all the time. I don't game on them, so I could not tell you. Do they have a lot of the same games? Is it just as equally as popular? Is it better in terms of like getting games or what?
I think it used to, back in the day, it used to be very clear cut that Android was the worst experience for a variety of reasons. And really, developers did not want to bring their games to Android because of the work and because nobody was spending money over there and because there's a lot of piracy, more so than iPhone. iPhone was really where people were actually willing to spend at least a dollar on games, you know what I mean? So a lot of times you'd see these cool games come out on iPhone and there'd be people saying like, hey, I have Android, are you going to bring it here? And it'd be like, you know, maybe if this is really does really well for us or something, we might be able to. But a lot of the times back in the day, there was no real Android would be like an afterthought type thing. And I think slowly that gap has closed a lot to where now I'd probably describe the two as pretty equal in terms of like actual app store offerings and stuff like that. Like each have their own little set of exclusives here and there, but largely things that are on iPhone are also on Android. And then Android, you have the added bonus of you could download like emulators very easily and sideload stuff or whatever. So for some people that puts it over the top compared to iPhone.
Sure.
I still think it's a platform that doesn't make like people aren't as willing to spend for games on Android as they are on iOS. I think that's still true. But I think just like in terms of like options, they're very similar nowadays than they were when all this
first started.
A
big reason for that is the iPad. Kind of normalization of game engines like Unity and things like that, making the cross-platform stuff pretty close to automatic. Like back in the day, what Jerry's talking about is like you basically had to send your game off to a game developer that specialized in Android porting, as opposed to now it's like, well, Unity just kind of exports both things. You upload them to different storefronts and you know, works. To me, iOS is still the predominant because that's where the higher value players are that spend a little bit more money. But Android sort of makes up for that in volume of users. So
so I also wonder how much the iPad is in that equation, because there isn't really, there isn't a compelling selection of Android tablets right now. Yeah. The iPad is just overwhelmingly dominating the tablet market. Yeah. And for a lot of people, especially people with kids, the iPad is a really important device, and the ability to buy a game on the App Store, and almost all games will also work on the iPad. That is something that Android really can't offer. And I think that holds a lot of people back. Definitely me, when I have invested occasionally in a game that I've been happy to pay more for, to pay to play on a mobile platform like Civilization, the ability to play that both on the iPhone and on the iPad is what is uniquely interesting about the proposition. It just isn't there on Android.
So do we ever think that there's a way to get Apple Arcade to Android? Because it doesn't seem like it's going to be a threat. Like you said earlier with like PC, people aren't going to go out and buy a Mac if there's an exclusive there. And it seems like the games that are free, that everybody can get, that everybody ports over for both are kind of there anyway. So like, what is to stop Apple from doing Apple Arcade for Android like they did with Apple Music and then Apple TV?
Yeah, see, this is,
plus being able to...
This is a big wonder of mine in the larger sort of subscription game space as a whole, right? Because like everyone right now has their own subscription offering that seems to be doing pretty well, siloed inside of their own platform. Like Apple has Apple Arcade, Google has Google Play Pass, Xbox and PC have Game Pass. PlayStation has PS Plus or whatever. And I've been really, really, really waiting for the day where someone starts making the move where it's like, hey, Game Pass is on PlayStation now, or Apple Arcade is on Android now. Because that's going to be a real interesting powder keg of like, okay, does everything just run on everything now? At which point, like, is there a software draw to a particular platform versus what's the cheapest and the best or whatever? I don't know. It's going to be really interesting when that inflection point finally happens, if it ever does.
But also, Apple is stopping, and as well, at least it has put up every obstruction possible to things like Game Pass on iOS. So and demanding that they go through a browser. So if they go to Android and they just they say, well, we're having our own kind of weird games only app store on Android, it would become very hard from a regulatory position to defend that. Although this week Apple was claiming that Safari was three different browsers.
I don't know if you guys remember this or if it was on your radar, but when Fortnite first launched on mobile, you had to get it on Android through like this weird Epic sideloaded store. So like, you know, there is, I don't know, I mean, we're getting in some crazy hypotheticals here, but there is a reality where like Apple could make their own sort of, it's like App Store for Android, where you get all this stuff and people just need to sideload it. And it's fairly simple to do that on Android. And, you know, it'd be any Google policies or whatever would be irrelevant. But I mean, that's...
Can't sideload on your iPhone, but we'll let you do it on your Android.
I don't know. It's like
it's not my
it's like
device.
It's like a what if episode of a TV show, right? Is these things happening?
That would be really funny. Yeah.
I just don't see Apple. I don't see incentive for them to offer that to Android people, because you would be doing that so that people would subscribe to Apple Arcade, right? And you'd get the $7 a month from them or whatever. I don't think you're going to get that from most Android people. And then beyond that, I feel like you're devaluing something that you're trying to position as a draw to iOS platform. So I don't see them giving that up just to be able to have those games be on Android. I think they're much happier being like, no, this is something that makes iOS unique and cool. You should come over here.
I mean, if you look at how they've handled iMessage, right? Like there's that, the game stuff's going to be the exact same way.
Yeah.
All right. The last thing I want to talk about is Vision Pro. And so, you know, there's no denying that I feel like a lot of this gaming push, in my opinion, is just trying to set up for Vision Pro, because that, in my opinion, is going to be what Apple needs in order for that to be like kind of, I don't know, interesting at launch. Like gaming, they don't really talk a whole lot about it, but gaming like has to be something that's kind of got to be a forefront, right? Like, what do you guys think?
Yeah. I would describe myself as a VR hopeful person. So I've got all the different, going back to the original Oculus, you know, I've been buying these dumb headsets and trying to play VR games and stuff like that. But the list of what I would describe as, you know, like actual real good VR games is like, I don't know, maybe a dozen games long, and that's being pretty generous. You know, you've got like Half-Life Alyx on PC. The Seventh Guest just came out. And there's just a very short list of games that feel like full, real VR experiences that could only exist inside of VR. And I think like that's what Apple is going to really need to have with the Vision Pro and not just like, oh, here's another platform you can play Beat Saber on kind of thing, you know?
Right, mm-hmm. right. So that's why I was wondering, like, what do they need to do to make that happen? Because there doesn't seem like there's a huge, like, market that they're behind in, like they are with gaming on your laptop. Well, and
I think it's a tough sell to be like this $3,000 headset for gaming, right? Like, that's already when there's stuff like the Quest that's $500 or whatever, or even the older headsets you can get for $200 or $300. I think that's a really tough sell just from a gaming sense. I think it'll be kind of like what we've been talking about, how the gaming will be a nice bonus. I think Apple likes it as a bullet point to try and sell people when the headset comes out. It'll be like, look, and there's these games that also work and are awesome. But in terms of like a killer app type thing, I think you need something like, I don't mean specifically Fortnite, but something like that. That's a social experience that young people embrace and want to be a part of, because Fortnite it was kind of the forerunner of games as like a shared space experience, right? So you would play Fortnite and it's a cool shooter and you do this stuff, but also you saw kids going to hang out in Fortnite, right? And then they started having like concerts in Fortnite or whatever. And it became this sort of like precursor to what everyone calls the metaverse or whatever now. So like, I think you need something like that where it's like a shared space with other people. It may or may not be a game, or maybe it's both or whatever, but it has to be something like that. I don't think it's going to be like one app that's like, you got to get the Apple headset to try this one specific game. It's so cool. It's got to be like, all my friends, you know, same thing as like, all my friends have iPhones and now I want an iPhone too. It's like, we all want this headset so we can do the hangout social thing together that all my friends are wanting to do, or you know, something like that, more than like one specific game.
Yeah, I am absolutely dying to know what ends up being the killer use case for the Apple Vision Pro, because like, that's been the problem with VR for the longest time. I mean, like, I've got all this VR junk in my house. Friends and family know that I've got VR stuff. And, you know, when they come over, they might be curious about it and want to try it. But it's a 15-minute thing where I run them through, like, the three or four really cool games. And it always ends with, okay, cool, thanks. You know, never, ever, yeah, like, right. Oh, my God, where do I get one of these? Like,
where do I get one?
I can't believe I've bought one of these before and everything else. Whereas, like, you know, that the iPhone had that magic, right? I mean, because, like, when the iPhone first started to get good with, like, you know, the iPhone 3G and 3GS and stuff, like, you saw people that were like, holy cow, like, this is a generational leap over the smartphone that I have now. And I, like, I need to get one of these. And I just, you know, Apple's going to need to figure out what that is for the Vision Pro. And I just, I don't know. I don't think it's movies. I don't think it's games. I don't think it's mirroring your desktop to a virtual space, and it's going to need to be something that no one else has thought of yet. And I don't know, Apple is really good at doing that kind of stuff, and I'm just really excited to see what that ends up being, because it can't just be what they showed in the teaser, you know, like a $3,500 headset to watch movies in a little cooler way, you know.
I will say I feel like it can be a little bit,
really,
because I'm not a big VR person. I've tried some beforehand. I tried Apple Vision Pro, and it was far.
You're a believer.
I don't know if I'm a believer of somebody who's going to use it all the time. That's where I'm still waiting to see. Like, I got to get my own to like use it, you know, in a 40-minute controlled environment where they're walking me through things. Like, it's it's a little, you know, hard for me to be like, yeah, I'm going to totally use this all the time. But what happens is, when I bought the Meta Quest 3, I start to recall like my time with the Vision Pro, and I'm like, that was just so much better to get on my face, to get it comfortable. Everything looked better. I didn't feel weird. It didn't feel like it was suffocating me. And that's how I feel every time I put on this Meta Quest 3. I'm like, man, I just want to do something cool, but like, I can't wear this for more than like 20 minutes to where I'm like, all right, just get this thing off of my face.
That's 100% where I'm at with the Quest stuff too, is, you know, it's like the Seventh Guest game is outstanding. Yeah. And I love the Seventh Guest from the old Mac and stuff like that, but it is very challenging for me to be in VR for more than like 20 minutes on Quest hardware. And I do find myself saying, like,
I think that's,
God, I wish this was better, but $3,500 better versus $500. I mean, that's,
well, just strip the price away from it, though, I think that's where, like, you're going to see, okay, I understand why this is a better experience, but is it enough at the end of the day when you put the price back in? Like, it's $3,000 difference, man. Like, why do I need to spend that much more?
See, what
I think my problem with VR is I think it's a more fundamental thing of I don't want something strapped on my face all the time. And you think of, like, Apple's biggest popular products that people kind of, you know, guessed were going to fail, like the Apple Watch or AirPods. Those are things that are on your body that are really unobtrusive. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, you know, think about how useful my Apple Watch was because it was just where a watch would normally be, right? Or you don't really think about AirPods being in your ears because they're comfy and they have transparency and, you know, whatever. I'm always going to know there's, like, a goggle strap to my face, and I'm not going to want to be, like, choosing, like, I want to be in the headset world, I want to be out of the headset world. I feel like they're things that work the best are the things that are always on you, and aren't, like, reminding you that they're there. So I think all of their, you know, showcasing, like, the virtual computing, you know, environments and stuff like that is all neat. Like, all that stuff is really cool, but it requires you to have this headset on. And right now it just feels like a specific choice you have to make of, I want to put the headset on and do this cool stuff, and when it's off, I can't do all this stuff, which you don't really get with your Apple Watch, which is just always on and always giving you, useful thing. You can, and people surely will. But for me personally, I haven't worn one, so I don't know how comfy it is or whatever. But I just can't imagine wearing that thing around your house all day long just so you have the benefit of the virtual space stuff all around you all the time.
I could easily see it being my number one travel accessory of all time, though. Like, every time you're watching something on your iPad on a plane, or, you know, you're trying to do some work and you're just like, what is this person next to me looking at? Like, I'm talking to my wife, I'm having a conversation. Like, you know, I don't need them to see what's going on. Like, you're watching a movie. You know, I always get weirded out when there's movies on the plane that you watch and, like, there's something going on that's kind of weird. And, like, you got a kid sitting next to you and you're like, I don't want to watch this next to him. Like, you know, I just feel weird about that stuff. So, like, I can see, and, like, also it keeps your head straight. You're not looking down. Like, it's just comfort. Right. But, like, $3,500 for my travel.
Well, so here's the thing. Do you guys do crazy predictions and then check and see whether or not they turned out to be right on this? You keep track of that at all?
No, but we should start doing that. Let's do that.
So
right
here's
now.
My prediction with the Apple Vision Pro. I think this is how Apple makes it a success. So they lean into all the financing shenanigans that they've been rolling up, you know, with the interest-free financing, the iPhone upgrade program, and everything else. Make the price of the Vision Pro irrelevant because they promote it as $150 a month or something like that. You know, with the every year you get the new one, whatever that price point ends up being. But they need to get off.
That's not
irrelevant. They need to get off of this whole, like, the headset is so expensive thing. Whereas, like, if Apple shows you this magical product, but presents it in a way where it's, like, affordable to you on a monthly basis, particularly with how into financing, like, everything Americans are these days, I think that the Apple Vision Pro will be the next device that every single person has. But if it's, you know, a $3,000+ headset that, you know, it's just for, I think you're going to, the problem Apple's going to run into is the people that are going to buy it are going to be the same people that bought Google Glass, and they're going to have a major marketing problem on their hands as, like, you know, all these tech bros are wandering around San Francisco with the headset on and you're not seeing anyone cool wearing it and anything else, right? Like, so that's the biggest thing I think they have to fight against.
Yeah, the thing's $3,500 now, but where will it be in five or 10 years? How much is it going to cost then? Because now, you know, people used to laugh at the iPhone being $500, and now they're like, well over $1,000, and it's not, like, weird anymore. So, like, once the headset comes down a little bit, I think what Eli's saying would make more sense, where it's like, well, I'm going to finally get the headset because I can just roll it into my monthly iPhone upgrade program or whatever. And it's not like I'm coming up with all that money up front. I think that would make it an easier purchase for people to make. But doing that with $3,500 seems like a lot. So I think it's a few years down the road at least before there's different versions that are maybe a little bit cheaper or whatever where you can start doing something like that. I think the first few years for sure are going to be early adopter people that don't care about the money.
Like,
they just want
the problem for me is, like, I am the exact demographic of person that would buy this on day one. And even me, I'm having problems with, like, that price point, particularly because knowing that the second one is going to be so much better. You know, and my OG one is going to have like no value because it's like the second one is generationally better, and people are like, give me $1,000 for that thing, maybe. You know,
Harley, what's your bold prediction, so we can look back?
Well, I think the important thing to understand with Vision Pro is that we try to a lot of the time think about Apple's past, and we try and compare with previous launches. So that's why everyone says, "Oh, is this the new iPhone?" And the iPhone was like this, the Apple Watch is like this, and we try and sort of say, well, this doesn't feel right with the Vision Pro. But I think it's because Apple doesn't actually want to sell headsets. In 10 years, it does not want to be in the headset business. It wants to be in the business of augmented reality glasses. Mm-hmm. And it can't get from A to B in the way that it was able to with tablets or smartphones or smartwatches. So it has to kind of take this alternate route and provide this other product to iterate on the software, on the technologies, and to set up all this infrastructure for weird stuff like prescription lenses and a fitting experience, and to get people comfortable with gestures and to really present that product. And effectively, it's almost like we're getting an iPhone in 1997, and we're wondering what it will be like in 2007.
Yeah.
That's kind of
where
we are with it. And that's why it isn't like for like.
100%. The tricky part of this is that, like, you know, these stereo 3D VR experiences are truly impossible to convey to people what they're like on a 2D kind of like trailer or whatever else. I mean, like, Jared, remember the first time I made you stand in line to try the Oculus at, what was that, E3 or something like that? And it just like blew your mind. You know, like, we were both totally aware of VR and everything else, just never tried it before. And it's just like, oh my God, this is, you know.
I was in like a daze the rest of the day because I was just thinking about like how crazy it was.
Yeah. So I'd be interested.
That's how I felt with the Vision Pro.
Well, I'd be interested to see how they solve for that problem though, because like for you to experience the magic, you need to have it on your face, right? And that is not a very scalable thing compared to here, watch this keynote on this new thing, you know?
But that's why I don't think they care about fixing that problem for years. Yeah. I think they're not even worried about how to market it. I mean, we talked about gaming before. They didn't actually show off or really tout the gaming abilities of Vision Pro. They kind of wanted to say, this is not a VR headset. This is not like an Oculus. And that's why they didn't really talk about gaming.
Yeah.
So all they want to do is just put this thing out there and let some enthusiasts use it. I mean, they're not forecasting to sell more than about 250,000 of them in the first year, which is really small numbers. They're just happy to give this to the enthusiasts and to just let this thing iterate in the background so that we can eventually work out what that should be. And Apple hasn't really done that before.
I would actually say that... I think that was kind of the path the Apple Watch took, right? Because they positioned it very differently when they first announced it. And it kind of took the people that bought it and how they used it for them to sort of morph into being like, okay, and actually this is more of like a fitness device and more of like a notification thing than like, you know, going to be a phone replacement for somebody. You know what I mean? Like, it took some years though, because when it first came out, it was sort of like, oh, apps on the watch are going to be amazing or whatever. And you come to find that like nobody really wants to like use an app on a little tiny interface like that or whatever. It's like a better companion device to your iPhone already. Mm-hmm. And it took them a while for them to figure that out. So I could see the same sort of thing happening with the Vision Pro, where it's like, okay, here it is. Like, how are people going to use this so that we can tweak things down the line for newer versions and kind of hone in on like what the audience is that's going
to
want
to
use
it? Yeah, I'm really curious to see what happens with the whole spatial computing thing, you know, because it seems like a, I don't know, not to use a buzzword, but like a new paradigm shift in the way that you use a computing device, very similar to how when we switched over from like command line stuff to, you know, GUI based, you know, like window interfaces. Like, you know, when you were using DOS back in the day, you never were like, you know, the solution to this problem is I wish I had this thing called a mouse and these things called windows and stuff like that. It just like came about and everyone was like, oh yeah, this is a million times better. Like, why would I ever go back to that? So I'm really curious to see if we see a similar inflection point with the spatial computing stuff, like outside of, you know, movies or anything else. And, you know, if the way that you use a computer drastically changes from just like, here's this virtual screen, you know, like that seems like the most boring use for something like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are unfortunately up against our time. So do you guys want to plug? Let's go. I mean, we already said at the beginning that everyone should go check out the Touch Arcade podcast, but we can say it again.
Yeah. Say it again. Touch Arcade Podcast. We're on episode 500 something. I think we're closing on 600. Jeez. Pretty crazy. We've been doing that
podcast
for
this
long. You guys got to
catch
up. I know. Where are you guys?
Episode 78, I believe. So we've got...
It's not bad.
We've got quite a bit of ways to go, but we'll hope to reach that one day. Yeah, I mean, this was great. We have to do this again because gaming is a space that I'm just like, yeah, I like games, but as Eli said earlier, like, I am very much that. I only play sports games very often.
That's how people are.
That's it. You know, like, I play Madden and I play MLB and NBA and, like, that's it. And even then, it's, like, hard to do. Or now with the Switch, I've been playing it since my son's, like, super into Mario. I've been playing all of those games again, just getting into it because he's into it, so.
Mm-hmm. I think it's tough for me because ever since the beginning of when I started with Touch Arcade, I've just been really passionate about finding, like, the really cool, unique mobile games. And mobile gaming has a stigma, pretty well-deserved, but still, that all games suck. All mobile games suck is something you hear all the time. And it's just not true. It just takes work for you to find the good games. And I feel like that's where Touch Arcade comes in, is like, let's try to unearth those cool games so you can ignore all the like noise and find the actual good stuff. But I think I just wish more people would try to give mobile gaming a chance, because you're missing out on a lot of really good stuff. And there's more good games than I could play in a lifetime. They do exist, and they are out there. It's not all garbage, like money grab stuff, although that stuff's everywhere too. Yeah. You know what I mean? You just kind of need to know how to navigate that type of stuff. But I feel like people are doing themselves a disservice by dismissing it initially without actually trying to put in a little work to find the stuff.
Converted.
And you don't even need to put in the work, because you can go to TouchArcade.com and you can read all of their stuff.
Yeah, via TouchArcade, I've converted so many friends of mine who are like mobile game skeptics or haters to like, well, no, you just need to stop downloading this junk. Like, check out what we're posting on TouchArcade and like give some of those a go. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, I didn't know games like this existed, you know?
All right, so yeah, go check out TouchArcade, go check out the podcast, and thanks, Jared and Eli, for coming on, and we'll catch everybody in the next episode.